everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Gathering. The supernatural world can be a dark, intimidating, and scary place. We gather to shine light on the mysterious and misunderstood aspects of the paranormal world. We bring to the table years of experience as mediums, healing channels, and paranormal investigators.
We share true stories from our experiences to dispel fear where we can and help you discover the amazing layers that make up the paranormal world. You are invited to gather around the metaphysical table with us and discuss the worlds of the unseen on The Gathering Radio Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Gathering Radio Show right here on the Para-X Radio Network. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Heidi, and we're here for a Triangle Tuesday.
Yes.
Because we're talking about the Alaska Triangle, and I'm so excited.
I am too. You know, we've been talking about a lot of the triangles for many years, right? And so now we have a bona fide guest.
Well, someone that actually knows what they're talking about when it comes to triangles. So yeah, I'm very excited about that.
Yeah,
so,
I know, me too.
Yes, we'll get to that in just a moment. How have you been, Steph?
Good. How about you?
Good. Busy, which is not a bad thing. You know, doing a lot of weekend retreats, running a lot of weekend retreats, which is phenomenal. And I'm grateful for that. So that's been keeping me busy the last few weekends. And paranormal investigating. I've got classes.
Yeah.
Coming out of my ears again. So, yeah. We're all over the Twin Cities.
Yeah. There's just crazy stuff. We were down in Rochester on Saturday with King Sisters Paranormal, which you love those guys. You know what I mean? So we're going to do a little collaboration with them. But yeah, we're still working on this brand new kind of investigating that we'll be able to divulge pretty soon. But it's so fun. It's just so amazing. You know, the stars are all coming together. So there's just really fun stuff on the horizon. Interesting stuff, you know?
Good. Well, that's fun.
It is
so
fun.
I have to say that I just found out that I'll be up in, well, we've been working on this, but we'll be up in the Duluth area now teaching paranormal classes. So I'm very excited about that because you've been to Duluth, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Duluth is active as all get out. So I'm very excited to get up into Duluth and get into some locations there and teach paranormal. Lead investigations and do all sorts of fun stuff up there. So
you know, the spirit herself is there. So it's awesome. I love it.
Yes. So lots of fun stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we have a wonderful guest, Heidi. Why don't you tell everybody about him?
Yes. Okay. So we have Mike Ricksecker with us tonight, who is an author, researcher, and filmmaker. And a couple of his books are Amazon bestsellers, Travels Through Time, A Walk in the Shadows, and Alaska's Mysterious Triangle. And he's written other historic paranormal books and has appeared on multiple television shows and programs, including the History Channel, Travel Channel, Discovery Plus, all sorts of channels out there. He's been all over the place and has a very interesting background. And so we're very happy to have you on the show, Mike. Welcome.
Yeah, Heidi and Stephanie, thanks so much for having me tonight. I really appreciate it.
Yes,
we appreciate it more than you can imagine because I love it that you're here.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've seen you on some of the shows you know, we just kind of coasted over there a little bit, but I've seen you on some of the shows and I'm like, yeah, we got to get this guy on the show because Alaska Triangle, man, that's interesting as all get out.
It really is.
We need to know. So
What would you like to know? Everything paranormal can be found within that triangle.
Pretty much, yeah. There's an assortment of different activity that's going on up there, whether it's, you know, paranormal, supernatural, cryptid sightings, UFOs, missing persons. It's just crazy up there.
Well, and in your book too, Lost Civilizations. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and, no, they have found the remains of giants up there. Now, back like in the 1930s when they found some of those remains, the Smithsonian took hold of them, or you know, even ones before that, and they've been lost at the Smithsonian, of course, as all giant remains seem to be lost in the Smithsonian.
Yeah,
but,
right?
Yeah, but I actually, in my research, dug up some interesting, basically it was a written work by a native Inuit almost 100 years ago, and he was trying to retain his culture's history and legends and things like that, their mythology. And within that, you found all of these different tales of giants, and the way that they were written, they're very, very similar to stories that we would find out of the Bible, like out of the, you know, like the Nephilim and things like that. And it was just really eye-opening to me, like, wow, how in the world this part of the world, so far away from the Middle East, are we still finding these stories? So somehow they traveled with the culture as they migrated over there.
Yeah, that's that. And, you know, that's so interesting, too, to find that in the history that, you know, this isn't just us coming up with this now. Yeah. This has been around for a long time. So that's, yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. So I'd love if you could start with, How did this begin for you? Like, where, even if you just want to start with the Alaska Triangle, but if you want to go back further, like, how did you even get involved in all things paranormal? Because your list is impressive with all the research that you've done.
Sure. Well, I'm an experiencer. It goes all the way back to when I was a child, about 8 years old, and had what we would call a shadow person experience. And, you know, that house that I lived in, I would never say was haunted. We lived there for about 10 years, and it was really a one-off incident, but it was really the real first significant paranormal experience that I had as a child. Now, when we moved from that house in Massachusetts back to Ohio, we're originally from Ohio, we had a 10-year stint in Massachusetts. When we moved back when I was 13, that particular house had a lot of shadow activity going on. It very, very different than that one single experience I experienced in the first house. This one was going on for several months when we first moved in, and my mother had seen it as well, which was kind of an affirmation. But when my first little paranormal investigation was about a year after we moved into that house, and my friend David and I are, we were visiting our friend Lori, downtown area of Worcester, Ohio, where we were living at. She lived in an older historic house down there. And we're just, you know, we're teenagers, you know, we're shooting the breeze, teen drama, that sort of stuff. And all of a sudden, Lori says, "I think my house is haunted." And David and I are like, "Ooh, this is interesting. Do tell us the stories." And so she starts telling us about some things that are going on around the house. There's an old family cemetery in the backyard, that sort of thing. Her major concern, though, was her bedroom upstairs. There was this one particular wall in which every time she would hang something up on it, might be an hour, a day, a week later, whatever, would always fall down. Again, we're kids, so we're talking like posters and things like that. She could not keep anything tacked up on this wall. So it's like the quote-unquote haunted wall. So David and I are like, all right, let's go check it out. We're going to go investigate, not knowing what paranormal investigations were. This is long before any of the television shows were out. I had read some Hans Holzer, so I, you know, was familiar a little bit, but you know, really didn't know as, you know, official paranormal investigation, that sort of thing. It just wasn't a thing back then. So we go upstairs and we're taking a look at the wall. Lori's telling us some more stories, and I didn't know this about my friend David at the time. He was a very, very sensitive guy, like spiritually sensitive. And he put his hand flat on the wall like that, and all of a sudden he turned this bright, bright red and started sweating profusely. And I'm looking at David like, oh my gosh, I'd never seen this from my friend before. This was a shock to me. And he starts going like wall to wall in the house, touching the walls, looking for the, you know, quote unquote hot spots. And it was that moment that I knew, I wasn't sure what it was, that all of this was. I knew it was something, you know, spiritual in nature, and I was, of course, knew what hauntings were, that sort of thing. But the act of actually investigating, I wasn't sure what that was, but I knew somehow, way, shape, or form, I was going to be involved with that for the rest of my life. As far as Alaska goes, I was stationed up there for 3 years, 1992 to 1995, United States Air Force, Element of Air Force Base. And so, so that was my first foray up there. Had some interesting experiences. I was not concentrating on the paranormal or supernatural while I was there. I was a young airman stationed, started a family there. I was really kind of focused on that. Even though I had some experiences, it was decades later when the producers for the Alaska Triangle reached out to me. And I already had several books at this time, and you know, my YouTube channel was going strong. They actually came across me on my YouTube channel on a video that I had done on the connection between portals and supernatural hotspots, you know, ley lines and earth energy, that sort of thing. And it's funny, it was not one of my most viewed videos. It was like the views were really, really low, but they liked the material that I talked about. It just didn't resonate with my audience, or YouTube just didn't farm it out. So we started talking, you know, about the type of show that they were putting together and the material that they wanted to cover. And so we're talking about earth energy and things like this. And then all of a sudden they ask, so what do you know about this type of activity in Alaska? And I was like, oh, well, you know, I was stationed up there for 3 years. People would talk on occasion about the Alaska Triangle. And they said, well, funny enough, that's the name of our television show. And so so I got involved with the television show, and that just inspired me to go ahead and write the book.
Awesome. Great. So you said that you had had some experiences there when you were stationed there.
Yeah.
And what kind of experiences?
Well, the most significant one, well, it was a recurring experience, not just for myself, but a lot of people in the department. The two of the 3 years there, the final two, because the first year I was waiting for my security clearance to come in. The final 2 years that I was there, I was working in the basement of the Alaska Command Building. Our department was called WMICS, Worldwide Military Command Control Systems, and we were housed in the same very large area as the Base Communications Center. Well, it mostly occurred in the back office area. Sometimes we'd see this out on the floor in what we called the rack room, but on many occasions, we would see shadows moving in and about the offices and the cubicles, and kind of, you know, just meandering about. So it'd be like a couple of us, you know, maybe walking down the middle aisle of the cubicles. All of a sudden, you know, we'd see something dart by, or kind of look at each other. Did you see that? Yeah, I saw that. You couldn't really, you know, be very vocal about it. Like, you couldn't take it up the chain of command, because you'd find yourself, you know, down at mental health and losing your security clearance. So we kind of talked about it amongst ourselves. And so what's interesting about this is that, you know, there was this story there that, you know, the reason for these shadows and what we're calling, you know, the haunting of the comm center was, you know, people talked about the building having once been a hospital, and where we were at had once been the morgue, and where our computer, the big computer racks with the multiplexers and crypto devices and all that, that supposedly had been where they kept the coolers. So, and that was the prevailing story that I kept for, you know, all of these years. Well, when I was doing research for the book, of course I'm going to tell the story, and I start researching the history of the building because I want, you know, my facts straight. Well, come to find out, the building was never a hospital. It was built for exactly what it was being used for, which was command, which just, you know, kind of opened up the big question. Okay, if these weren't like the souls of the people that were being brought into the morgue, then what were we witnessing? And this ended up becoming a piece of some of my time travel research. You know, were we seeing, was the energy of the triangle there helping to create an effect in which we were seeing, you know, some form of time slip? Maybe we were seeing personnel from the past, maybe even the future. We could have been seeing ourselves at other points in time. So that became another part of my research there.
Wow. That's interesting. So what outside of being on the base, like what experiences or research did you do that helped create your experience or your expertise in the Alaska Triangle?
Yeah. While I was there, you know, I didn't do a lot of investigating or anything like that. I had a growing interest. And so, it was mostly in general, learning about, like, that's when I really first learned about EVPs was when I was up there. And not really anything to do with Alaska specifically. It was, I think it was the Sixth Sense kind of put me onto that. Oh, you can record voices. And so you're trying that sort of thing out. There were different people and personnel that I had talked to up there who had experiences. So it was really, finding people that had, they were like-minded, that were also experiencers. This was almost like really pre-internet. Like the World Wide Web was really in its infancy. You were basically, we would dial into old bulletin board systems and find people and kind of chat through those. And so you'd find people to chat with and talk to about your different experiences. So that was kind of really the bulk of my research up there. I had an apartment up there, the first apartment that I had off base when I first got married. We had an inkling something was going on there. There's always something strange in the living room, in the back patio area, where things would move around, would hear strange knocks, and it could have been neighbors. Not like I investigated it out. We're a very young family, had a baby, that sort of thing. So I didn't have a lot of extensive research time while I was stationed there. It was more after the fact, after I got involved with the television show, that I said, I've had some experiences there. And now I'm doing this television show. I'm back up here. Let's see what's going on up here. One of the more bizarre things, talking like energy of the Alaska Triangle while I was up there, April 1993, there was a plane taking off from the Anchorage airport. And they say it was a mechanical failure or what have you, but there was an engine that fell off a commercial cargo plane and landed in the parking lot of a supermarket. Just bizarre stuff would happen up there.
Whoa. Wow. Whoa. That sounds dangerous and bizarre.
Can you imagine pushing your groceries and here comes this big engine from, yeah, from a jumbo jet? You know what I mean? Oh, my God.
Fortunately, it was the backside of the parking lot. Yeah, you talk about bizarre. Nobody got hurt from this thing. Wow. Yeah. It fell into the backside of the parking lot where nobody was parked. Shrapnel fell off the plane and fell into houses around the area. People were walking into their bedrooms and finding like shrapnel that had gone through the roof and are sticking into the floor of their bedroom.
Oh, my God.
But nobody got hurt.
That's crazy. Incredible. Yeah. So what do you think, just in your own, because of the research that you've done and living there, what do you think is going on with the Alaska Triangle? Like, why is all of this stuff happening? What do you think is at the core of it, if there's anything at the core of it?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a fantastic cocktail of different energies that are up there. And so first and foremost, you have to look at the magnetic energy of the area. So 1965, U.S. Department of the Interior did a survey up there, about 100,000 square miles. Now, Alaska, 600,000 square miles. But they did 100,000 square miles, and they categorized what they called five different magnetic characters up there. And within these magnetic characters, they discovered what they called negative anomalies. So they're already detecting something strange, something that's off with the general magnetism of the area. And, of course, that magnetism originates from our Earth's core. It's a spinning, molten iron that creates a magnetic field, which is a good thing for us because that protects us from the solar wind so that we don't get fried when we go outside. It's a protective measure for us. But as it rises through the Earth's mantle and crust, it interacts with different metals and minerals, and depending on what it interacts with and the quantity of whatever that mineral may be, it's going to create different electromagnetic fields. And so whatever is sitting there under Alaska, as that magnetism hits it, it's creating some really, really wild effects. So you have that. That's just one. Secondly, you have there's a lot of seismic activity up there. There's a lot of earthquakes. I was up there for a 6.7 earthquake. I was staying on the base at the time, and it sounded like a cannon went off. And young airmen, you know, we're talking 92, or maybe it went off in 93. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, we're close to the former Soviet Union. They just had a meltdown here a couple of years ago and broke up. So it was something crazy going on. But no, it was an earthquake. But it was a pretty extensive one. I mean, Alaska has had the on record the largest earthquake in North America. 9.2 back in 1964.
9.2. Wow. Yeah. That's crazy talk.
Yeah, it was horribly destructive. So a lot of seismic activity. Then you have a lot of volcanic activity up there as well. Mm-hmm. When I was stationed up there, when I first was stationed up there, November 1st, 1992 is when my plane landed. Well, Mount Spur just across the Cook Inlet had erupted a couple months ago. There's still ash falling from the sky. We're having in the morning, we're cleaning off the computers. And,
oh, wow.
We had to wrap them up at night. When I bought my first truck up there, and, you know, checking under the hood, you know, around the lip of the hood, there's like these little piles of ash. It was crazy.
Oh. Wow.
So you have a lot of volcanic activity up there. And then, of course, when we talked the solar wind a moment ago. Well, as that's bombarding the area, that's where we get the aurora borealis from, is mm-hmm. the way that the solar wind interacts with the ionosphere up there. And that protection is a little bit thinner up there than the rest of the world. Yeah, it's a little bit thinner at the poles. So, it's again, it's like this fantastic cocktail of different energies up there that creates all this wild activity.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is, totally, like you said, that's a cocktail, right?
Yeah.
Of just a mix of things. So I'm curious, from your time there, because of all of the reports, and I'm sure there's so much that hasn't been reported with like the alien activity, alien sightings, those kind of things. Did you have any experiences with those or anything with that?
I did not. I mean, there were people would kind of talk in whispers while I was up there, but I didn't actually see or witness or was involved with anything like that while I was there. There, of course, have been a lot of sightings in Alaska, a lot of reports of UFOs, UFO activity. Supposed to be like Mount Hayes is supposed to have a base. There's a lot of ideas about underwater bases as well. People don't realize this. There's over 3 million lakes in Alaska. That's how big it is. Yeah. the coastline of it, people don't realize how big Alaska really is. It's about 2.5 times the size of Texas. Mm-hmm. So yes, you have all those lakes, you know, all over the place that they could be hiding in. Or if you take a look at the coastline of Alaska, the coastline of Alaska is greater than the East Coast and West Coast added up together. It's huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of places where it'd be conducive for UFOs to, if they have a base somewhere, that'd be perfect.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it would be. Yeah, I guess it's hard to, because even on a map, when you look at a map, it's just, it doesn't do it justice. Most of the maps don't. It's not.
They just usually stick it in a corner. Like, oh, yeah. There's Alaska, too, in Hawaii. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah.
So we have a question in the chat room. And actually, Cindy, you were reading my mind, because I was just going to ask about this as well, about the Black Pyramid or the Dark Pyramid. Yeah. What do you think about that? You know, the Alaska Dark Pyramid.
Yeah, I do cover that in the book. And we covered that on the television show as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this goes back to about, it was around the time that I was stationed up there, 93. And essentially what happened was China was doing nuclear testing, and the seismic reaction from that, we knew they were testing. We knew they were going to set it off. So we decided to measure that, you know, how far are we going to feel those waves? And so when those waves crossed over into Alaska, under Mount Denali, it was Mount McKinley at the time, they renamed it a few years back, they saw what looked like an interesting pyramidal shape under Mount Denali. So this has led to the idea that there is some sort of hidden underground pyramid there. Now, the original report comes from Doug Munchler. He was stationed with the Army at the time, Fort Richardson. So he would have been right next door to me back then. And he caught it on the news, and he was trying to get some follow up on that. He told, you know, other friends, hey, you know, check out, I just saw this on the news. I've got to go to work, wherever it was he had to go, see if somebody else is following up on this or if they're going to re-air the story. This was really interesting. And nobody could find it. Nobody, they didn't do a follow-up to it. No other stations up there covered it. It was like this one-time airing. And he found that really strange. So he went down to the TV station and inquired about it. And they denied having run any sort of story like this at all. So he's kind of scratching his head, you know, what in the world? So as he's walking out, there was a junior aide or somebody that came out and said, took him to the side and said, well, there were a couple of gentlemen in suits that came by a little while ago and grabbed those tapes. We did air it. So this was something that, you know, was not supposed to air, and essentially like the quote-unquote men in black came and confiscated those tapes. So this has caused, you know, some follow-up of, okay, does anybody have any additional information as to what is going on with this Black Pyramid? Now, when we ran the story on the Alaska Triangle, we've done it again on other shows like Ancient Aliens and The Unexplained. They have found those seismic reports. That did happen. There was that nuclear testing. You know, those shockwaves did extend out to Alaska, and so we've acquired those reports. As far as the stories, the witnesses, those kind of anecdotal stories, Linda Moulton Howe has done a fantastic job of piecing together a lot of that information on her Earthfile site. And so whenever this story gets brought up, Alaska, Black Pyramid, of course, she's always brought on to talk about it because she's really the one. She's really the one that has collected these stories from these people that the one gentleman, it was his father, spent some time in that area. It's remote. So when we featured this on the Alaska Triangle, we had a small team go over the area, and they're kind of looking down. You could see remains of humans activity. It looked like a little runway. There was an old road that went up. There was a spot where you could tell, you know, a building had been. That doesn't really explain what might be underground there, but it does look like, yes, there was some human activity in that area. So,
wow. Fascinating. And not surprising that that would be just ripped away, right? Mm-hmm. You know, run right. A news story and then gone.
Oh yeah, that happens a lot more often than you think. Yeah, I spent 3 years in Alaska. The other years, I spent 6 years total in the Air Force. The other years were spent in Maryland at Fort Meade, and I was working there for NSA. So, yeah, it happens a little bit more often than you think, and that's about all I can say.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, that's fine. I would imagine that happens quite a bit, and for all sorts of reasons, you know. I'm sure there's multiple reasons why they just don't want us to know stuff. So, right. Okay.
Yeah, and there's legitimate national security concerns, obviously. Mm-hmm. But some of these things, like when you start talking, you're going down the road of disclosure, all the, you know, UFO conversation that we're having today, which is great that we are having this conversation. They're finally admitting, yes, there is something going on that we can't explain. Wonderful. These people that they're bringing up to a lot of these congressional hearings, great, again, that, you know, we're having an open forum about all of this. But those that have been involved with the community for decades, we already know this stuff. It's not, the stories aren't new. It's just, mm-hmm. It's nice that it's finally getting read into the record. So it's one of those cases where they had to admit something. You know, everybody's running around with an HD or 4K camera in their pocket and getting, you know, some wonderful photography, videos, all of this. So they had to admit something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. Absolutely. And because it's almost comical you know, if there's so much out there that the general population is experiencing, and then the government's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. So we're going to go to a commercial break here in a second, but I just want to make sure that everybody out there listening, if you have any questions or in the chat room, please go ahead and send us your questions, and we'll make sure that we get those to Mike so that we can get all of this very interesting insight from you today.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so hang on, everyone. We're going to commercial break. This is the Gathering Radio Show here on the Para-X Radio Network.
I am Oz, the great and powerful. Who are you?
If you please, I'm Dorothy, the small and meek. I've come to ask you...
Silence! The great and powerful Oz knows why you have come. Step forward, whippersnappers. Bring me the broomstick of a witch.
Marvel's broom? But if we do that, we'll have to kill her to get it.
Bring me her broomstick, and I'll grant your request. Now go.
Oh, no, you won't. Don't think of leaving. My little party's just beginning. I always stir my cauldron Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network. Now back off from that broom or I'll turn you into Toto's chew toy.
I do believe in witches. I do.
Hey, Steph, did you know the average number of years people own their first home is 7 years?
Really, Heidi? 7 must be the number. Maybe that's why we're feeling this need for a change.
I think so. We've been doing our weekly show now for 7 years.
Maybe this new time slot will last us another 7 years. It's amazing that we are now in our 10th year of broadcasting on the Para-X Radio Network.
No kidding. Remember 9 years ago when we started doing our show monthly on Wednesdays?
Yes. This change feels somehow like we are going home.
In April, the Gathering Radio Show is moving to Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
It's exciting. Change is good. See you there.
Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
Welcome back to the Gathering Radio Show on the Para-X Radio Network. We have Mike Ricksecker with us tonight, author, researcher, and filmmaker. And we're talking about the Alaska Triangle tonight, which has been a very fascinating subject that we love to hear about. So thank you so much for joining us tonight, Mike.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. This has been a nice conversation so far, so can't wait to see what the second half is going to bring.
Here we go. So I'm curious what your biggest fascination is with the Alaska Triangle. If you were to do another round of research, like what would you focus your attention on?
Yeah, so I'm actually diving back into that right now. My latest book, Travels Through Time, was the first book in the Connecting the Universe series. So the second book is on Earth energy. And so I'll be re-exploring a lot of those fascinating concepts with not just the Alaska Triangle, but other triangle areas around the world and how all of that energy is connected. So that's going to be my focus in diving back into that region. I'll talk about a lot of the phenomena, of course, and how that's related. But the energetic properties and how that generates a lot of this type of activity and how it might be spawning things like portals, how it might trigger some time travel related incidents and things like this. It's kind of a, when you're talking paranormal, supernatural phenomena and other different phenomena that occurs, UFOs, which some may be interdimensional and things of that nature. You kind of have to start from, the base and start from the beginning. So talk time in the first book. This next book is going to be on Earth energy, and we'll keep expanding from there and moving forward.
Oh, awesome. That's fantastic. Cool.
So we have a question in the chat room from Kathy. It's kind of a long one. So okay. Alaska is very vast, as you mentioned, so it's understandable that lots of people go missing for various reasons. Do you know if the majority of people that have gone missing are in the Triangle area? And also, are there any similarities between the Alaskan Triangle and the Bermuda Triangle?
Yeah.
So two questions in one.
Yeah, it's kind of two questions, but it's fine. Yeah, so of course, a lot of people get lost in the woods. There are kidnappings and things like that. It's just it's just an exponentially greater number. You know, it's really, really abnormal. Alaska has today about the same population as the city of San Francisco. So when you talk about 16,000 people going missing in a 30-year span. That's a lot of people. The percentage is really, really high. And, you know, some of these, especially, you know, when we talk like the airplanes, just absolutely getting lost. Some really, really high profile cases like 1972, Hale Boggs, who was the House Majority Leader, Alaska Congressman Nick Begich was with him. And the largest search and rescue mission in American history is launched. You know, thousands of people are involved. They're sending spy planes out there to try to find this plane. Nothing is ever found. The 1950 Douglas Skymaster that went down, it was just over the Alaska border in Yukon Territory near a place called Snag, still within like that triangle area. And remember, when we say triangle area, we're picking three points, but it doesn't make a perfect triangle. But we pick three points and call it that. That one, again, at that time in 1950, it was the largest search and rescue mission. They had two different countries looking for it. Military personnel had already been between the two countries, between the United States and Canada, were already doing joint exercises together. So they took all those personnel off those joint exercises, went in to go looking for them. Nothing was ever found. There was a smaller plane that went down in the same area where that large Douglas Skymaster had gone missing. They found that like nothing. But this larger plane, they couldn't. So there's something really, really, really strange and odd going on. And some of these people that are found that come back, we'll talk about, you know, strange stories of, well, yeah, you know, I heard something off the side of the path. I took two steps to go take a look, didn't see anything, went to go back onto the path, and the path was gone. It like disappeared, or they got teleported somewhere, or maybe they ended up, you know, and you could speculate another dimension, another point in time. There's all kinds of different things we could speculate on it. Mm-hmm. Another bizarre case, Michael LeMaitre. This was it was the Mount Marathon race about 12 years ago, and he, like everybody else, you know, runs up the mountain. He never comes back down. Just totally disappeared in the middle of this very, very public race. You know, they send all kinds of people up the mountain to go looking. Did he fall off the path? Is he hurt? You know, never found. So it's just bizarre. As far as relation to the Bermuda Triangle, a lot of the phenomena that you find in these different triangle areas, Bermuda Triangle, Bridgewater Triangle, Dragon Triangle out there by Japan, you know, very, very similar phenomena is occurring in these areas of, you know, really high, strange electromagnetism. Yeah.
Wow. And which could be creating, like you had mentioned before, maybe some kind of portal or, you know, time slippage or something that is, you know, right place, right time, and off you go, you know, like a absolutely huge plane, you know?
Yeah. And we know that Bruce Gernon had, you know, this type of experience in the Bermuda Triangle back in the 1970s. He survived. He came back, but he had flown through what he called an electronic fog. It had basically swirled up into like this tunnel, and he was able to navigate through it. But he had a bit of a time jump with this. It wasn't large, but it was at least substantial enough where essentially in 3 minutes he had traversed 100 miles. Not to him it was 3 minutes, but it really was some sort of time-related incident where all of a sudden, boom, yeah, he ended up, you know, 100 miles off of where he was supposed to have been in just a couple of minutes. Totally bizarre. And when we talk about, you know, some of these different planes going through a portal, which is one of those speculations, a little hard to confirm it, but that's one of the ideas. So let's think about this. If it goes through a portal, where does it end up? Does it end up in another dimension? Does it end up in another point in time? Okay, let's say it goes, you know, to another point in time. Could go forward, could go backward, but we'll just say, we'll throw an arbitrary number out there. Let's say it goes 500 years into the past. Well, what would the indigenous people of the area think about you know, seeing an airplane 500 years ago, because they would have no context of an airplane whatsoever. You know, they would only think of, you know, birds are in the sky. So, you know, it's very big, very loud, thunderous in nature. So is this where some of the Thunderbird legends come from, or some of these airplanes that have gone through a portal and ending up in another point in time? You know, we may be finding them under the ice somewhere and have some, you know, bizarre data, you know, as we examine it, be like, okay, you know, here's that plane from 50 years ago, but it's carbon dating some of the organics around here to 500 years ago. That doesn't add up. So be interesting once we find some of this stuff.
Yeah, it is fascinating. And you think about just the possibilities of, you know, are time and space folding? You know, like with that, I remember reading and hearing about that, the pilot in the Bermuda Triangle, where it's like 3 minutes, right? And he's 100 miles, and the gas didn't make sense. The usage in his plane did not make sense. And so you're like, wait a minute, there's something else had to happen here. Right. And so what is it? Is it some kind of jump? Is time and space folding up? And, or is it, you know, kind of like a loop or some kind of portal? Like, it's just fascinating to think about.
Yeah, it's some sort of anomaly in space time. I mean, when we get down to the base of it, everything is frequency, resonance, energy, vibration. So again, you have electromagnetism that is interfering with the, you know, frequency and resonance and vibration of that area. And so it can cause strange things to happen to space and time. It can set off these different, he might have hit some sort of strange wavelength that sent him, I don't know, where did he go for those couple of minutes? We're not really sure, but where he ended up was totally bizarre. So this is still an area of research we're trying to understand and wrap our heads around.
Wow.
One of the things, too, that you mentioned, we were talking before the break on how big Alaska is, right? Mm-hmm. You know, two times the size of Texas, right? Yep. And then you're talking about the population being the size of, you know, for the state is the size of, you said San Francisco, right?
Yeah.
The city. So with the amount of people going missing, the numbers do not add up.
No.
Right. It's just astronomical. And again, there are people that go out into the woods and get lost. They might, seriously, they can get eaten by a bear, gored by a moose. Some people just want to get lost up there. There was one individual, you know, they found his remains a few years back, and he was one of those people that just wanted to get away from civilization. And unfortunately, he perished out there. So there are people like that, but it's too many.
Yeah,
the numbers are too high.
Wow.
Right. Yeah, that's what's so interesting. And I mean, it's terrible, but it's interesting too that it's just, there's not I don't believe in coincidence. I don't think a lot of people do. So it's just what's happening then.
Right.
And that's what is open for continued research then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just you know, one of those enigmas of the world that, and we have to try to draw correlations to some of these other events in anomalous areas across the globe. You know, everything's connected. You know, we can't just, you know, compartmentalize one area over here and not take into account all the other areas that, you know, have this similar phenomenon. We need to try to, you know, figure out, okay, what are the similarities between these, so we can try to figure out exactly what in the world is going on here, which again, I believe has more to do with the syncing up of different frequencies. And once we are able to figure that out and unlock it, we may be able to do different things, like maybe be able to open up our own portals. And they are trying to do that in the lab. they seriously are. We might be able to travel through time and things like this. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So tell us what some of the unusual creatures of the North are in this Alaskan Triangle.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you have a lot of the Sasquatch, Bigfoot sightings. You know, one of the interesting ones is the Kushtika, mm-hmm. which is essentially, it's a half otter, half man. And a lot of the stories with that are very, very similar to Wendigo-type stories, where you know, it'll lure people out into the woods, and it could you know, kill them and eat them, that sort of thing. Or it could also turn them into another Kushtika. That's, you know, really very, very similar, again, to what we have with the Wendigo stories. But this is a little bit of a different looking creature with the otter representation there.
Wow. That's, yeah, almost a little scary when you think about it.
That would scare
us. Yeah, and they have their own version of the Loch Ness Monster, too, the Lake Iliana monster. They call it Illy, kind of like Nessie.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it funny, you know, because this creature would be, you know, older than Loch Ness, but...
Right,
but they call it, you know, Alaska's Loch Ness Monster, and they've been, you know, sighting this thing since the 1940s, where, you know, people were flying over Lake Iliamna, would see the thing, and one of the individuals was he was very, very well respected chaplain up there. He was a teacher and a professor as well, and but he really enjoyed the outdoors. And he would see this thing frequently flying over the lake. And one time where he was flying over the lake, he radioed up one of his other buddies, said, "Hey, the thing's out in the lake. Go check it out." And so his guy got one of those float planes out in the lake, and this thing essentially took down his float plane.
Yeah. Seriously?
It's bizarre.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. That's scary.
Just wow.
But, oh, nice. You know, one of the things that we've talked about on our show, too, so this creature, you know, could be that old, or if it's interdimensional,
right?
It's just, you know, continuous, you know, new, maybe another one coming through from a different plane, you know, if there's these portals or right. You know,
yeah.
Different dimensional openings that could be, there could be one, and it just happens to come through, you know, from wherever it is now.
Yeah, that idea has gotten a lot of traction lately, that especially with Bigfoot, that a lot of these are interdimensional because of the problem that we don't find their remains. We don't know where they go. A lot of people see and witness them. And a lot of those stories I can't argue with. You know, some of them I can.
Yeah.
But like with anything, you know, you get the same thing with ghosts and UFOs and all that. There's some stories out there you're like, really? But there's some others that are really, really fascinating, and you can't find a reasonable explanation to debunk it with. And so then, yeah, the question becomes, okay, where do they go? How do they hide? And there is an argument between two different sides in the community. Okay, are they interdimensional? And then you have others that will say, well, you know, they know their habitat really well. They know the hiding places. They know where to go. There might, you know, whether it's a, you know, fissure between rocks, or they might know where, you know, some small cave is that they hide at. So, and I understand both sides of the argument, you know, where. To me, jury's still out for me as to whether they are, you know, beasts in the wild that really, really know how to hide well and know their habitat very well, or if they are interdimensional in nature. Because I do believe, you know, we see a lot of things morph in and out of our plane of existence that is either residing at another point in time, in another dimension, could be in ultra-terrestrial, you know, not extra, but ultra. There is a difference. So yeah, there's a lot of different possibilities in play here.
So tell us the difference between ultra and extraterrestrial.
Yeah, I know. I just brought that up.
I mean, yeah, so, I was going to say. Okay,
yeah, so extraterrestrial. Yeah, extraterrestrial, of course, is, you know, a being from another planet somewhere else in the cosmos that has, you know, some extra meaning outside our planet. Ultra would be something that is here that could be on, you know, some other dimensional plane, is coinciding with us right here on Earth, and it might be something we just don't usually see. So when we talk, you know, you look back at some old legends like the fairy folk and things like this, you know, they were beings not, you know, necessarily that we weren't talking extraterrestrials back then. We were talking some other being from some other realm, but it was really, you know, alongside here with us. So when we look at ETs, they could be one or the other. They could be a being that is living here on our planet, you know, from some other dimension. Some still could be even, you know, living underground that we just don't know exists, or out in the ocean somewhere. There's so many creatures out there that we just are not aware of. It could be, again, from some other place in the cosmos, but they could be using an interdimensional mode of travel to get here, because, you know, physically, just using Newtonian physics, like you know, we do to, you know, shoot ourselves up into space, it's not feasible to go long distances. I mean, they might have different genetics. They might be able to live longer, but, you know, you're talking, you know, sometimes thousands or millions of years. It's probably not, you know, they're probably not living that long. So they may have figured out the Einstein-Rosen bridge, you know, a wormhole, or they may have figured out how to move themselves from one dimension up to another and then use that dimension to come back. And they may have figured that mode of travel out. So they're, mm-hmm. Again, a lot of different ideas at play here.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. And that's what's so interesting about this is that it keeps us looking, you know, mm-hmm. it keeps us doing the research.
Mm-hmm. No, it's the mystery that drives us.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's the mystery that Steve will be thinking about this in the middle of the night now when I wake up. I'm going to think about all these things.
Well, and, you know, people, you know, ask, okay, you know, if you figure all of this out, you know, then what's next? And you know, I almost think, we're not supposed to know it all, and that's one of the things that you know keeps us going. If we knew it all, we'd be like, okay, ho hum.
Yep.
You know, it's boring now. Yeah. I think it's, you know, things like this, these mysteries that keep us excited, keep us going. We'll figure out a little here and a little there, but everything, yeah, probably not.
Yeah. No. Yep. I agree. I don't think we're supposed to know everything.
Right.
For sure.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I want to make sure that everybody knows, like, what do you have coming up that you want people to know about with your work or, you know, books or shows or what do you have that's coming up here?
So big thing, and really it's kind of last minute to jump on this. We have the Stargates of Ancient Egypt tour that is coming up next month, April 16th to the 28th. Registration is still open, but you're talking like just over a month away. So if you want in on that, jump on it now. Can't wait any longer. So there's that. I just started. So I have my Connected Universe portal. This is an online learning platform, community, like-minded people coming together to discuss a lot of these different topics. I've opened up a new blog to complement that, to coincide with it. And so, you know, people can find that. It's a Substack blog, so connectoduniverse.substack.com. So people can jump on that. I'll be posting a new post in the morning. But that, it's my writing journey through, I mentioned before, I'm writing the new book on Earth energy. So it's really the writing journey through the Connecting the Universe series, plus all the other projects that I have going on. So yeah, definitely jump on that too. And like I said, the portal site, connectoduniverseportal.com.
Awesome. And I'm going to post your website, MikeRicksecker.com, in our chat room, because I know that we can find all of your information and what's going on in your world through your website and your mm-hmm. Facebook page as well. We'll get that connected. And but yeah, you have a lot going on. I know you had your book tour, your newest book, and more, it sounds like, coming out. So busy.
Yeah, a lot of events throughout the year. ParapsyCon is the next one where you can find me if you want to get a signed book. That's in Mansfield, Ohio State Reformatory. Other ones, Michigan Paracon, Haunt Atlanta, a couple of others that are coming up. So, yeah, be sure to come by and visit.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So we do have a question, and I'm not sure you can answer it, but I'm going to shoot it anyway.
Sure.
While you served in the Air Force, is there anything that you experienced that you could not talk about then, but maybe you can now? No.
No.
See, I'm gonna say no for you, but I have to ask.
No, there are limitations on that, unfortunately. That it's like I can go so far, and then I have to stop. And you know, there are things that you said. Like when I was at NSA, very first day, when you have that orientation, you're basically brought into a room. You're watching all of these videos about you know, people who broke the trust of the United States, and you know, went to jail, treason, all this stuff.
Oh boy!
It was kind of crazy, and you basically are signing documents. I will not talk about this stuff, and not even in like book form. Not even, you know. So I have to be very, very careful about what I say when I talk about those years. Just general Air Force stuff that wasn't as stringent. It's kind of when you talk about a top secret clearance, it's very compartmentalized. So you're assigned, it's not just, okay, top secret gets you into everything. There are certain letter designations that get you into different areas. And then on top of that, you have to have a need to know to get into those areas. So it's this crazy dance you have to play. Mm-hmm. There's some things I can talk about, other things, that's as far as I can go.
We know.
Yeah.
Right.
But we like to ask all the questions.
Yeah, I know.
It's well, been there for a while, and neither one of us wanted to ask, but I'm like, okay, we got to do it.
I'll tell you so, what, yeah. though. We have another minute or two here?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay, the controversy of Bob Lazar. Do we believe that he was working out there, a site that basically was alongside Area 51, and was he working on reverse engineering alien technology, the propulsion systems? That's very, very highly controversial. And Element 115 and all this stuff. Okay, I don't know. I don't know if all that, but what I do know is true, and why I actually do believe Bob Lazar is it had to do with his personal life, where whatever was going on with his wife and this other guy, and was creating this havoc in his life. The fact that they basically took him, sat him down in the meeting that they had, and they were about to pull his security clearance and all of this stuff that was going on with him. The way that he described that, and I've watched him talk on this a couple times now. The way that he described that whole process. I had some issues with my ex-wife during the time that I was at NSA, and what he described was exactly the same thing that I was going through when she was having her issues, and they were threatening to pull mine and all this stuff. And it's like, you know what? I don't know about all the reverse engineering, all that stuff, because I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. But I believe Bob just on that. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
So some of that other knowledge can kind of help you, gauge whether you trust somebody else's story or not. Like another quick example, there was, and I won't say who it was, but a few years back, I was another individual in the field, and he was talking about, he had a government insider from NSA that was talking about, the seventh floor of NSA is full of alien technology. Well, just having been there at NSA for a while, I do know that nobody would ever use that phrase on the seventh floor of NSA, because there's four buildings, and so you'd have to designate which building it was. You would never just say seventh floor. The only one that you have that with is the 11th floor, which is where the brass was. And even when they moved from HQ to the 2A building, even though it was on a different floor, they kept it. They still named it that floor. So it's little intricacies like that kind of helps me to determine whether this person is telling the truth or this person isn't.
Yeah. Well, it's helpful to have that personal experience in the military and NSA to know, kind of use that as a gauge. So that's helpful.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Because the rest of us would have no idea.
Right? We would not know.
Right.
That's correct.
No. Oh, gosh. Well, you just have so much going on, and this has been such a delight to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh, yes. Absolutely appreciate it. It was a great conversation tonight.
Oh, well, come back anytime.
For sure.
And you are, the big thing you have, you're going to Egypt? Is that what?
Yeah. Yeah. Stargates of Ancient Egypt tour. That is April 16th to the 28th.
Nice.
Fantastic.
So if anybody out there would like to go, I mean, I'm sure there's, you have to do it away. But there's a link on your website, I'm guessing.
Go to my website. It's under, you'll see the tab there. Depending on if you're doing it on your phone or the computer. The computer, the tab is at the top, events and tours. On the phone, you have to hit the little menu icon. And it'll bring up the menu for all the different options. Go to events and tours. Yeah.
Awesome. Sounds cool. Good.
Well,
all right.
Thank you so much. I know the music's going to start soon.
Yes. We appreciate you being here, and yes, we'd love to have you back sometime, because your plate is full, and you have some amazing stuff that you're working on, so love to hear more about it.
Absolutely. So, thank you again for having me.
Thank you, everyone, for listening and for all the good questions in the chat room. And for all of our troops who are listening, thank you so much for your service. And please be safe. The world is a crazy place right now.
Yes. And everybody out there, wherever you're listening, thank you so much for tuning in. And don't forget to listen to the podcast. We'll have that link on our Facebook page. And thank you, Para-X Radio Network, for hosting our show once again. The past 7 years have been great. Looking forward to 7 more. And Sarge, the most amazing producer on the planet, thank you for pulling us all together once again. And we'll see you all next week.
Night.